the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
So the Mets go to Baltimore. You and I sat here yesterday.
Yeah.
And all we said was, get a split. And Al, you can take every doubleheader as a split and stick it where the sun don't shine.
Very rare this happens. We know that.
You like the idea, Jerry. You like the idea of a doubleheader because you felt like they were guaranteed a victory.
That's actually not what I say. I said, even though it's about 50-50, I like the idea that the Mets have David Peterson starting in the one game. We had no idea what they were going to do in the second, but I sat here and said, just get a game and go to Kansas City having won two out of three series wins. And we'll get to David Peterson in a second, but this Fantastic Four, I mean, you can't, so let's start very early in the first game. You can't have the first two guys on with Juan Soto and Pete Alonso coming up and just come up with nothing, especially after the way, and I know it was, they got rained out the night before, but especially after the way they came up with clutch hits two nights ago, you felt good about things. Vientos with the double in the fifth or the sixth inning, whatever that was. They don't score. They got guys on base. It's just, this is the thing, as fun as the game was on Monday or Tuesday, whatever it was, Tuesday, this is kind of what you were talking about with the Yankees.
Yeah.
You know, early on, the two walks, they don't score. Well, they came back and won. The Mets blow the 1-0. Awful. Just awful.
And Charlie Morton's been terrible this year. He's been better as of late, but they know him extremely well. The Mets from his Braves days, they have a ton of at-bats against him. They know Charlie Morton well. You get first and second, then you get the pass ball off of just the normal pitch. You get the benefit of having second and third, nobody out. And you're looking to, like you said, you don't know who's pitching game two. That's the game. You got Peterson on the mound. You jump out to a lead there.
Against a wounded
Orioles team off of the rain, obviously, but the day before, coming from behind and beating them in the eighth inning. Like, that's where you pound on them. You get a couple of runs early in that first inning. That game feels completely different. Instead, you get the swing and miss from Soto, the swing and miss from Alonso, and then Winker gives you the fly ball the last time you see him in the game because his back stiffens up. I mean, that first inning, to me, is where you lose the game.
I agree, with you. I agree. Now, you want to say the sixth inning, too, because if you could have tacked on a run or two, all right, maybe they had a chance to kind of come away with a bigger lead.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's the deal. I get it. Now let's move ahead to the seventh and eighth inning. It's still 1-0. You don't feel great about a 1-0 lead, but you do have a guy on the mound, too. You know, a couple of weeks ago gave you 9 innings.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a guy on the mound, too, aside from a start or two, has been rock solid. I know I'm old school. I know I'm old. I get it. I'm disgusted with pitch counts because, by a little secret, they don't work.
Yeah.
Guys are still getting Tommy John surgery. It doesn't work. The guy's at 90 effing pitches.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing him out in the eighth inning. Really do appreciate it. Why in God's hell? What are you taking him out of the game for?
I was puzzled when they talked about, and Peterson talked about in the post game, that, you know, since the seventh inning, he told me, even going out to the seventh, he was batter to batter. Why with a bullpen in the manner in which they have pitched over the last, for Stanek?
He had such an easy seventh inning.
Skip told me he was going to be very aggressive in this game. Aggressive for what reason? You got a bullpen game coming up next. You don't know who you're going to have to throw. You got Peterson. He enters the seventh inning, batter to batter, and then you send the back after the eighth, which I agree, I applaud, but you give up one hit, and he's out of the game to go to Stanek, and his 6 ERA over the last month. Like, that one puzzled me, too, I have to admit. Because, not only that, like, if it's a manager who consistently does this, I go, okay, this is how he manages the game, this is how they've got, like, he pushes Peterson a lot.
I know.
He's consistently letting Peterson go out there and throw these games.
And you got the All-Star break coming up.
And you got the All-Star break coming up. He's going to have a week off. You're going to have, you got a game later in the day where you might need everybody. Like, I was very surprised. I mean, I don't know if I hate it necessarily. It is the way managers are built today. I understand it to some level. You don't want to see him blow the game there. You feel like you've got arrested Stanek to come in. But at the same time, because of the elements of the situation, the game later, This is the one guy they push. The one guy they push. It was and the idea that it was from the seventh inning on treating it batter to batter made very little sense to me.
The one thing, you know, the only thing to me that makes it different is if it's the ninth inning,
right?
And you want to see him get the complete game. He gives off the leadoff hit. Bring Diaz in.
Right.
I'm fine with that. I get that. As much as I probably would still like to see him, it's his game.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know the one thing I always talk about: these starters are great, but once you walk off, the game's out of your hands.
Right.
And we saw it times 10 last night. And then I don't know if you even looked at it, but because I was talking about the Yankee game, I couldn't watch it because of the pitching early on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sticking with it through inning after inning. Did you take a look? Do you have any idea what Ryan Stanek's numbers were in terms of pitches and strikes thrown?
No.
He threw 31 or 32 pitches. He threw 11 strikes.
Oof.
I mean, you got to be kidding me. I don't know. They've won games with, you know, I'm sitting here praising Brazoban the other night. So it's not like it hasn't worked, but this isn't your fifth starter. This isn't your fourth starter. Like, this is your horse right now.
He's your guy.
And a guy who has proved he can do it and has done it this year in a game that, is it a crucial game? No, I'm not saying it's a crucial game.
Right.
But if you win that game, the feeling within the team is just so much better than it, and with their fans, so much better than it is now. And I'm just so tired of 2025 baseball. I really am.
I get it.
You know, there's got to be, you know, the pitch count is such a big deal. How about we just watch the way the guy is throwing? See if he's laboring. At no point did I think he was struggling yesterday.
No.
None.
No.
And it wasn't like it was, you want to say you pushed him to 110, 112. All right, I don't love the pitch count, but I get it. Fine. 90?
No.
Come on.
And you bring him in, and you bring in a right-hander so they feel comfortable going
to
Gunnar Henderson.
And you know you're going to Henderson.
You know, I mean, do you like that matchup better?
God.
You like Peterson versus Vasquez or Stanek versus Gunnar Henderson?
No, Peterson versus Vasquez.
Yeah. I mean, it was
Peterson versus Gunnar Henderson.
Absolutely.
And I'm not one of these, in this day and age, I think guys are so good. I don't even get caught up in the lefty-righty thing as much as I used to when I was a kid. But I'll take that 100 times out of 100.
No.
So just and then to come back and Keith was on this the entire second game. Mets are flat.
Yeah.
And I know they took the 2-0 lead, could have been more, but they got a couple of runs. All right, so he felt a little bit better, but it felt like from maybe the third inning on, after Baltimore came back, he must have said it 5 times. This is a carryover from the first game. This team is playing flat. Now, it's one thing for me and you to say that.
Yeah.
I think it's easy when a team's not scoring to say they're flat.
It
because
is.
If all of a sudden they're scoring, all of a sudden now they're not flat. But when a former player is there and watching it and telling us that, that means something to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it looked like that. It looked flat. And to me, it starts with the first inning of game one. I know it's the second game. But that's the game, and the manager treated it as such, too. Mm. Like, and we disagree with how he handled it, but clearly, Mendoza felt game one was very important, and he was going to be aggressive with his bullpen because of it. And to have that first inning dud, and then have the blown game leading into the second game, and knowing, and I also think there's an element to this, too, this was the bullpen game, it's the last one. They've got their guys coming back.
For sure.
They know it's the last time they're going to have this type of game. You know, they're heading into the All-Star break. They're going to Kansas City. They're getting their stars back. And it just felt very lackluster. I totally agree. There was just not the impetus to go out there and win the second game.
The thing about Senga, though, I agree. You shouldn't think that you're going to need your bullpen arms too much this weekend.
Right.
Senga coming off injury, though. Would you be shocked if he's out of the game after 3 innings tonight? No. I wouldn't be.
Yeah.
You know, mid-season, I would be.
Yeah.
Coming off the, we see this guy, as good as a pitcher he is, everything's got to be perfect for him. And if there's something he doesn't feel exactly right, or maybe he's struggling to find the plate, pitch count is a little bit high, you know how they deal with this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked if they're in their bullpen in the fifth inning.
No.
I mean, he's been mid-season they've gone to the bullpen in the fifth and sixth inning with him.
Yeah, absolutely. In today's day and age, you never know. A couple of that pitch count gets high, especially first game back. I'm sure he is on some sort of pitch count, Jack. I'm sure
he's going to be.
I'm sure it's like 85 or like, I don't think he's going to get to 100 pitches. So at any moment, it could be an early game. And this goes to me the other thing, too, about this whole entire thing. Like, Why are they so afraid to bring up a kid from the minors to make a spot
start?
I don't know. Like, why would you rather see this? You know it's over, right? Like, and if this game is important, if you're going to treat the first game like it really means a lot, if you're going to treat these games like they're important, throw a young kid out there, give him a spot start. What's the worst thing that could happen? How are you going to ruin McLean, the kid having a great year, by, you know, giving him a spot start here or there? And knowing that you got your guys coming back anyway, if he pitches poorly, you send him back. It gives you a better opportunity than throwing, you know, Waddell out there.
I agree. I don't know. I don't understand the decisions a lot of these teams make with the way they shuttle guys up and down. That, to me, was a spot where you could have done that. And now they had an opportunity to take back first place from the Phillies and said you gave back a full game by losing both. And it's just a terror. You know, they had a nice time in Baltimore. They felt, even though they lost Sunday, they felt pretty good after taking two or three from the Mets. Monday off in Baltimore, you win Tuesday. Great, exciting win. Yep. Rained out Wednesday, still feeling pretty good. Yesterday stunk, and now they got to sit on that going to Kansas City.
Yeah, no, but listen, ultimately, though, wherever they're a game and a half back. They've been able to tread water through these injuries in the pitching staff. It was an ugly day. Hopefully you move on and bone up in Kansas City. And you just, yeah, you get
bone
you,
up.
Bone up, you get your pitchers back, and you go about it. But yeah, to me, again, and I thought you, the first thing you said too, the Fab Four, as ironically right after the Paul McCartney talk from the owner, those guys got to come through in that spot to win them that first game. And then you feel a hell of a lot better about this thing, even with the second game. So a lot of things gone wrong, a lot of issues. I still feel like they stem the tide with winning those two series against the Yankees and against the red hot at the time Brewers.
Yep.
And now, listen, you're a team in Kansas City that hasn't played well. There's some thoughts they might look to trade some people, not having the season they hoped, going to Kansas City, get a couple of games, feel better about it heading into the All-Star break. You have your better pitchers on the mound, or at least you have some guys coming back from injury. You feel a little bit better about things. It was an ugly day, but I still feel like they stem the tide a little bit. I don't feel as good. Like, we talked about how good you could feel about this team. That obviously tempers that, but I still feel like they did enough to tread water with those two series and winning the first game of this one in the fashion they did, that you just, you know, you head into Kansas City and hopefully you feel that these guys come back and you get back on the right foot. But it was an ugly day, no doubt.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
So the Mets fall to the Baltimore Orioles in game one of their doubleheader, 3-1. Of course, Yankee win last night. Cam Schlittler, continue to take your calls on that. I am sensing something in that commercial break, if just by scanning social media, that I had not sensed from Met fans yet. And it feels like we finally reached a tipping point. What that is, I will discuss right after we hear from the manager of the Mets, Carlos Mendoza, who spoke postgame here about why he took David Peterson out at 90 pitches, cruising along, going to Ryan Stanek there. We have the audio, right, Tommy? Here we go.
Not to belabor the issue, but with the All-Star break coming up, why was it better to batter for Peterson as early as the seventh there?
I mean, you're already in the eighth inning, you know, 90 pitches. So, you know, he did his part. I mean, we can sit here and talk about it all we want. At the end of the day, we didn't execute offensively. So.
That's a terrible answer. I'm sorry, it's a terrible answer.
Well, he kicked it over to the offense.
And
look, he's right, because they had runners in scoring position 11 times. And what were they, 1-for-11 of runners in scoring position? So, and he also said that. He mentioned he talked to a large degree about the offensive inefficiencies that have come down to David Peterson in the eighth inning. But ultimately, the bats were silent, and it did come down to David Peterson.
Absolutely. Look, baseball is pitching, it's defense, it's offense. If one phase isn't down, the other phase has to click, and you had a clicking phase with a lead with David Peterson. We heard from more from Mendy on David Peterson.
Carlos, can you just take us through what went into the decision to take Peterson out after 90 pitches there?
Yeah, look, I mean, since the seventh inning, he was going batter to batter, especially with all the righties that were there. Once, you know, he got through the seventh with the lefty leading off, I knew, again, he was going to be batter to batter. Couser got him there going the other way. And, you know, once you get to the eighth inning, you know, I had Stanek ready. It just didn't happen today.
When you say you had him going batter to batter, even though he was so pitch efficient, was there a limit coming into the game today? Did you guys want to limit him at all?
No, not really. And, again, in understanding that they had the lefties ready to go at any time. So it was the seventh against Brazoban or the eighth against Stanek. But it was just one of those where, you know, we felt like against the righties there, you know, especially once he gets through the seventh and then goes back out for the eighth. You know, we turn it over to our guys, and we didn't get the job done today.
I analytics and pitch counts have totally handcuffed managers from reality.
Right.
It's 90 pitches. It feels like every pitcher we get to these new made-up numbers, he says...
You can't even argue it with David Peterson.
No.
Seriously, you can't, because you go back to May, 104, 100, 101, 99.
He goes over 90.
June, 191, 106.
And like our caller brought
up... last start, he threw 103.
Right. And our caller brought that up last segment, and it was brought up in that first question you heard. The All-Star break's also coming up. Mm-hmm. It's not like you need him in four more days. And the tiebreaker should be, you're playing a doubleheader today.
Yeah.
And your weakness is your bullpen. And you don't have a true starting pitcher in game two of the doubleheader. The fact that David Peterson was efficient with 90 pitches into the eighth inning is a blessing he gave you that you should be taking advantage of. And you hear him say, well, it was the eighth inning. That sounds to me like a manager who's so used to baseball going, well, we got late in the game, 90 pitches, time to go to the bullpen, it's the eighth inning. No. Take a step back, Mendy. You can go batter to batter with 90 pitches. But is also his other excuse, Tiki, and we were talking about this in the break, the idea that, well, look, it was all right-handed hitters coming out.
Okay, but it was also the bottom of the lineup, and collectively those right-handed hitters were hitting .210.
It's an awful lineup.
Exactly.
And Gunnar Henderson was on the bench.
And Gunnar Henderson was on the bench. And Gunnar Henderson is not coming in lefty-lefty. It's not happening. Now, he might, but you're not as worried about that as if Gunnar Henderson was a righty.
This is a really bad moment for Mendy. It's a bad just feel for the game and feel for the moment, feel for the understanding of a doubleheader, what your pitcher had given you.
You know what's funny? All I wanted him to say was, you know what, I made a mistake. I should have left him in there.
I overthought it.
I should have left him in there. He was cruising. He was only at 90 pitches. If the seven hole batter, Henderson took over. I think it was seven.
Castillo, right?
Yeah. No, Vasquez. Whatever his name is, the shortstop who played instead of Gunnar Henderson.
The kid, okay.
Right? If he gets a hit and it's two guys on, then maybe you go to your bullpen. But one hit, you're not worried about it as much in the eighth inning.
It was Vasquez, obviously, the backup shortstop for the Orioles. Right. It's a terrible feel for the moment. Right. It's a terrible feel for the game. Just say I was wrong.
That's all you got to say, Mendy. I was wrong. I made a mistake. I should have left David in there. And you know what? I'll be better next time.
What I was saying about the feel I'm getting, I'm curious, we'll get positive Tommy's thoughts on this in a second. Social media is not a great barometer. I could tell by looking over at the calls, but look, these exist. This is the first time I've sensed in 2 years with Carlos Mendoza as the manager, a out with the excuses for him. People love Mendy, and I like Mendy too, but I love Aaron Boone at times. He's not allowed to not get criticized. I sense a slight turning of Met fans and getting a little sick and tired of Mendoza decision-making. And I'm curious on your calls at 888-808-1019. Is today one of those moments where you wake up as a Met fan and go, we have dreams of winning a World Series here. And what I can't live with is managerial decision-making being the ultimate downfall of this team. And that's an overthought by Mendy today. And it's not his first overthought this year. It might be the most egregious, but we've seen a couple in the last couple weeks. I just don't think that's a good look, and I don't think that's a good answer. Positive Tommy, what do you got?
What are you asking me?
Are you turning on Mendy at
No,
all?
Absolutely not. When you're talking about going to the NLCS last year, and really, I thought Carlos Mendoza should have been the manager of the year last year for what he did with that club. And
I
when
agree
you look
with that.
At this season, a team that is now one game out from first place, I see no reason at all whatsoever for anybody to be calling for his job.
Well, nobody's saying that.
You want to be a little frustrated?
Nobody's talking
about
that.
Hold on, you're going in the opposite direction.
Oh, I thought you were saying, because what I'm seeing is Mendy on social media.
Really?
Come on. I didn't see that.
Yeah,
you can dismiss
those. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about just being frustrated
with him.
With the decisions.
Usually, put it this way, when everybody talks about the Mets and criticisms, the bullpen this, Mendy constantly gets the, we like Mendy. I'm sensing negativity towards Mendy. Nobody is calling for his job now, but I think Mendy now, for the first time, has been put on public alert that you're going to start to get criticized here. This team has big expectations. You can't be a reason that they start losing baseball games. And today, I'm sorry, on top of offense, was a managerial loss.
Hear me out, and this is not excuse making. Right now, the way the Mets are playing, it's like walking a tightrope a little bit today. or just in general, where you're dealing with a one-run lead or you're dealing with tight games and those decisions get more magnified.
That's where you make your money as a manager.
Right. But when you push the wrong button, it's going to be more amplified. And I think we've had a couple situations like that, whether it was pitching to Judge in the third game of the Subway Series, taking Holmes out or leaving Holmes in the other night, taking him out too early the game against Milwaukee.
Alonso bailed him out for the Holmes decision.
And then this one here today with Peterson. So there's a couple ones that you could point to where he hit a button, didn't work out well. Next time he hits it, it could. And I think that's the ebb and flow of a baseball season. Like, you're going to push the right buttons, whether it's moving. We don't talk about moving Lindor to the second hole. Lindor's been hot ever since. That's a plus column. Being a little bit more open to changing things like that, hitting Lindor leadoff last year. So I think Mendy will manage more by his gut. That's why I was a little bit surprised to hear him say about the batter-to-batter, because he's usually more of a gut guy.
It screamed Aaron Boone.
Right.
That was more of a Yankee thing where it was, you know, pitch count or it's the eighth inning. He's usually more of a gut guy. I would almost say the next situation like this, Mendoza will manage from the gut.
Zoo is with us. He's a Met fan, and he doesn't have to have a positive moniker. Can I get the authentic Met fan response here, Zoo?
I'm disappointed. I think that the firing is out of this world.
No,
no, it's not, we're not even talking about
that. I will
that.
Not even.
Yeah, no,
that.
But that's just the crazy Twitter heads. But I do think that this is I agree 100%, terrible moment for Mendoza. You had Peterson, not only who has been one of your brighter spots through all the injuries and everything in that starting rotation and pitching just lab in general this year. You have him going out there, throwing a gem. Yeah, he gives up a hit. It's the seventh hitter in the lineup. You give him another batter. It's a double header. I mean, why are you just wasting bullpen just for the sake of it? It's overall, it's just a dumb decision, in my opinion, and I can't defend it.
Look, bats got to wake up in game two of this doubleheader. If they lose this game, the doubleheader, you are basically a Pete Alonso magical moment away from being swept by the Orioles.
Which is pathetic.
Yeah.
Well, two things here. Let me start with me first. I don't have to do anything. I want to be positive. I didn't sign a contract with the company where they said you must be positive Tommy at all times. So I'm not contractually obligated to be positive Tommy. I want to be positive Tommy because of, and you would agree, the way everything exists around here, social media, I think it's much needed. As far as what Zoo said there, and I think a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's the Orioles. Check the record. They've been one of the best teams in baseball since May. This is a team that was really good last year. This is not the Rockies. This is not a basement bottom feeder, even though they are in last place. You lost a tough game to a good team. You won a tough game against a good team the other night. Now you have game three coming up a little bit in a few hours. Take that. Take the series. That's the name of the game.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Your Mets calls here on the table. A couple of things from last night. Number one, Clay Holmes is a five-inning pitcher. I understand trying to push him last night. You know, the starters aren't back yet, meaning Senga and Manaea, they'll come back this week. So Mendy may be trying to figure out if he can push Clay Holmes through that sixth inning. He's already surpassed his career high in innings. We know he's a converted reliever to be a starter. For me, at this point, BT, five innings and done. Anytime Clay Holmes takes him out, you got to keep him stretched. You got to keep him fresh for the stretch run of the season and then the postseason. I would not push Clay Holmes beyond five innings anymore if I'm the Mets. Five and dive, and that's it.
I mean, I wouldn't do that if he's economical. I wouldn't be married to that five inning benchmark. Like, but you know that when that first laborious inning really pops up, then you know it's going to be a quick night. I might actually do something different. I might just skip him two or three turns. I really might shut him down for a couple weeks.
I don't know how that would impact him, and I don't know if I would do that if there's not a need to do it. But even last night, see, that's what I mean. Like, it was a low pitch count. He was in the 80s or high 70s, whatever it was, when it started the sixth inning. So it wasn't that, but you could see right away he hit the guy. Like, he just get him out of the game, didn't have it.
Yep.
But again, I understand experimental phase stuff. Like, hey, let's see if we could push him through the sixth inning here. I would not do it. I'd want to keep him fresh, make him a five-inning pitcher. I'd rather a great five innings then get the length of Holmes, especially knowing now that you're getting Senga and Manaea back in that rotation where you shouldn't need that from Holmes. And I want to keep him fresh, dude. There's no need to push it. It's the up-downs that are the issue to me, not the amount of pitches that are being thrown.
Well, but here's the thing, though. You said you want the great five innings. I'm not so sure you're going to get five great innings if you just keep rolling him out there every 5 days. He's already 35 innings past what he did a year ago.
All right, but he had great five innings last night.
No, no, and I understand that, but it's still also July 9th here. All mean, I've got to save him. You want the five great innings. Heck, I mean, in the postseason, the way bullpens are used and deployed, you'd even take like four to third really good innings against a good team. And then you just got to piece things together, and you're going to have to get another bullpen arm to do that because Diaz is great, and obviously you got some other pieces down there. But I don't even know if you're going to be able to get the those quality innings to start that you're hoping for now. I mean, there is a long way. Sal, he's projected to throw 75 innings over his what he did a year ago.
Yeah, so but obviously this had to come into their planning, right? Now, does that mean were they going to go to a six-man rotation at some point?
They were early in the season.
So maybe that's part of the plan, and maybe they do get another arm or whatever. When Tyler or McGill comes back, okay, then they could go to a six-man rotation, keep everybody fresh, Senga and Holmes specifically. But at bare minimum, I would not go any more than five innings with Clay Holmes. Like, what's the reason for trying to push him through the six last night?
No reason for that.
Okay, but I understand it because, hey, the pen has been overworked. Hey, he's been on fire. Hey, the pitch count is low. Let's see what he could do. But to me, it would be more like I liked what they did against the Rays, even though people complained about that. And I think it was against the Braves after that, where Holmes came out of these games a little bit earlier than a normal.
Remember, it was
start.
The Colorado start where he said he'd recover.
Yeah, well,
that
he
was
didn't.
Kind of, I know. It was so the residue from that.
Correct. And then in the Rays series, so they took him out early. And then the Mets imploded that Friday night. And then they never really recovered. That set them into the tailspin. But I would rather that. I'd rather them be cautious and be aggressive in getting him out than push him. To your point, like, I wouldn't skip him starts, but I'd rather that than start seeing if he can pitch six or seven innings.
I don't think you can do that. Now, listen, because the last couple of series aside, and we'll get these calls. I know Met fans are fired up. We'll get to them in a second. But I think that the way the Mets played for a while, we haven't really referenced the lab as much as we did when things were cooking nice and clean for you guys early. I can promise you this. The most basic checkpoint in their lab is understanding that somebody who's on pace for 172 innings, 172 is a little cavalier and I think way too reckless, and they obviously have to know that. I mean, if they're able to, you know, take some of these guys who are basically on the scrap heap and flip their careers around, you bet you're behind. They understand that this is dangerous when he threw 63 innings a year ago and he's on pace for 175, basically. I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you can do that.
You can't do that. You cannot do that. So it's either shut him down, which I think they should do, go to a six-man rotation, which everyone might when they get
Manoah
and Senga
back. But how many would that save? Like, if we did the math on that.
I mean, off the top of my head, I think you shave off at least 35 to probably more. I would say 40 to 70. Very quick math there.
Well,
and you know what? But those 40 to 70 innings that you could apply in October, you know, I there's just no way you could roll him out there without interruption the rest of the season and have him pitch 175 innings. He'll be dead. He'll drop dead on the mound.
Remember the conversation with Luis Gil a year ago?
Yeah.
I think that is exactly what's going on here with Clay Holmes, aside from the fact that Holmes is converted from a bullpen arm. But with Gil last year, it was, oh, we were worried about the innings limit and keeping him fresh into the postseason. And the Yankees continued to say it was never about the innings. It was about how his body is holding up and responding.
Based on their analytics and the data, correct. The RPMs. A lot of people think it is pitchers, and you're right. That's smart bringing that up.
So
yeah, it's not.
That's what the Mets are going to do here when evaluating Holmes. There are going to be metrics that will determine whether they shut him down, whether they limit him. So I would assume right now those metrics are, hey, everything's fine.
I'm sure they're fine still.
But it could be fine until all of a sudden it's not.
Yeah.
And then by the time it's not, it's too late because you don't know how you recover from that.
And that's why, to me, you got to be proactive. And that's why if you sit around and you mess around, you might have a real issue with Clay Holmes. You can't let that happen.
BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Hillary's calling from Long Island. What's up, Hillary?
Good morning, guys. Hillary is the 11 under 500 fan from last year. Mm. Happy we're on where we are right now.
There you go.
My question to you guys, what do you think Lindor was saying to Alonso after he hit the home run and before Pete got up to bat? Just curious.
Say that again. After the home run?
After Lindor hit the home run, and he came back from home, and then Pete was going to go up to bat, and they were like having a little chat.
Well, that's
so
always
wondering,
about that's always about pitch pattern. I mean, most hitters who care about being good, then they do that. Hey, what did you see? Which way did it break? What? That's just a baseball conversation. I don't think he was like, hey, come on, Petey, we could do it, buddy. You know, it's like, hey, this thing moved, this thing zipped, and he's got this, and look for that, and here's he's coming into you, it's going away from you, stuff like that.
And maybe it was like, that's why I'm an all-star, and Soto's not.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Soto. I mean, he needs more money. I mean, that's Soto, first thing out of his mouth. I got to get to that later. That actually bothered me. I can't derail it now. I know we're talking. Yeah, I heard that. I'm like, this is why he's a robot, and this is why he bounces around, that he's a great hitter. But that was a ridiculous statement Juan Soto made about the all-star money. Give me a break.
Brian is calling from Rochester. What's up, Brian?
Hey, bud.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I agree with you, man. If I'm, as a Mets fan, I want to be all in. And, you know, I'm not saying trade away the farm. There are a lot of pieces, you know, prospects that the Mets can trade. But from the number five down in that lineup, and I know we have maybe the best four in baseball, arguably, but from five down, you have no idea from night to night what you're going to get. I mean, even with Jeff McNeil, there's games when he looks great, and then games like last night where he's swinging at the first pitch, it's out of the strike zone, grounding it out to second base, and that's five holes in the lineup from night to night that you don't know what you're going to get. And what if a game comes down to, you know, the Mets are a run down or they're fighting to come back late in the game, and you have the 7, 8, 9 guys coming up, I don't feel very confident that they're going to put a rally together. Mm-hmm. I mean, they need another bat. They need Suarez. They need Buxton. They need somebody like that in the lineup.
I obviously agree. That's what I'm saying. Thanks for the call there. I also do think you, and I think you said this or at least intimated this earlier, like, you can go around the other good teams in baseball, and they're not rolling out 3 All-Stars, 7, 8, 9. But to me, so I understand that part. The difference, though, is the fluctuations in Nimmo's game. Like, you know, what did Cohen tweet? The Fab Four, something like that. Give me a break. I mean, come on. Nimmo, this is 5 straight years where the on-base percentage has gone backwards. Now, when Brandon Nimmo was in a zone, Brandon Nimmo is doing damage. He's hitting bombs, and he's doing this, and he looks really good. But this is just proactively guarding against the intermittent ebbs and flows of baseball, where I don't think what's behind those guys is good enough to carry the for a pitching staff that I'm still a little worried about.
Yeah, I mean, if Nimmo's not hitting, but that's a problem with the top of the order, not the bottom of the order for me.
And but it becomes amplified, Sal, if the bottom of the order's not doing what they don't do.
But give me the 7, 8, 9 that give you confidence. Whoa, what if the game comes down? It's a one-run game, and it comes down to the 7, 8, 9 hitters. Guess what? You're screwed. You're screwed in that case, just like any other team would be in baseball. You don't let it come down to that. And if it does, you hope that one of those guys at the bottom of the order can get on. This is not Ray Ordonez here. Beatty could get some hit. Now, I don't think Beatty's going to be there long-term. Mauricio, one or the other, pick somebody. Even McNeil, like, you'll live. I don't like Jeff McNeil as a player. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I like McNeil. I don't love him as much as Met fans do. And I think his inconsistencies and attitude have turned me off for years. So I would look to move on from McNeil. I think you could replace him. I'd rather Acuna and have the speed and defense, whatever. But McNeil's versatility has been proven valuable. He could put a bat on the ball. He could hit with a little pop if need be. Should be a high average guy. You're telling me you can't live with Jeff McNeil in the 7, 8, or 9 holes? Like, that's not bad.
I'm not saying that. What I am saying, though, is there's no DeGrom on the staff. There's no young Matt Harvey or Noah Syndergaard or Dwight Gooden and El Cid and Ron Darling. You don't have that on your staff. So to me, you really just have to mitigate risk here and understand that if the Mets are going to get to the World Series, in all probability, they're going to hit their way there. And I don't think you have enough offense from, you know, 4 or 5 down. That's the simplest way for me to say it.
I still think that the pitching you're dismissing here, even without their rotation intact, they've had the best ERA in all of baseball. Like, we could have a conversation whether it's sustainable or not. They have a great closer in Edwin Diaz, maybe the best in the game.
He's terrific. I'm not talking about Diaz. Diaz, stud.
So I think they'll build the bullpen out, which is going to be on par with the best in the game.
All right.
And the rotation, okay, do they have the ace? No, they don't. But Senga, Manaea, and who knows what else they're going to do, you know, with that starting rotation. I'll take my chance with that. You're right. They were built to hit. But it's not like they have no pitching and they have to score 100 runs a game.
Understood. But again, the risk that I'm trying to circumvent here is, and hey, Manaea might come back in those 17 or 18 starts where he totally changed his windup. He's the same guy. And I hope he's healthy when he gets back and there's no more interruptions. I mean, he was really good when he figured things out and he messed around with his windup here. But there's no guarantee that he's that guy. I mean, everybody, Manaea's coming back. Ron Guidry's not coming back. I can't think of a good Met lefty outside of Elsa. Whatever. That's why I throw him out. Like Al Leiter, thank you very much, Hop. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, I like Sean Manaea. He's got 17 starts of equity as a New York Met. And everybody's making it seem like the king, you know, with a 2.07 ERA and 7 All-Star berths and 2 Cy Youngs is coming back to Queens.
He was an ace last year.
He was an ace for half the season.
Okay,
but did he get hurt because he changed his entire windup?
I mean, he's got loose bodies in his elbow. That's a common thing.
I
mean,
I know, but it's not that common to change your entire approach midway through a season
when you're
a pro.
I don't know.
How many pitchers change their windups?
If he's healthy and... We can only assume that he's going to be because he's coming back. I would expect him to be what he was in the second half of last year.
I would, too, more than not.
And if he's not, I mean, that's a whole different...
But if he's not, it might be too late to make the move, which is what I'm saying. You guys got 2.5-3 weeks to get it done. Less than 2.5 weeks. So I'd rather have Sal an abundance of riches and deal with that down the road, and then I could sit Clay Holmes, or I could do it, or, you know, if Marte never comes back, or if Winker's a stiff against lefties, whatever it might be, I am stacking up. I am loading up, and I'm going for it. And the Mets looked awesome last night. They've looked very good at points this year. Don't let it fool you. They got 3 or 4 dead spots in the lineup, and the staff's not as good as some people think.
I mean, round of applause for the New York Mets. And the opponent does not matter. I don't want to hear that it's just the Baltimore Orioles, because it's 162 games and you play who's in front of you.
Right.
To be punched in the mouth like that after a day off and have that implosion inning, and we'll more on that with Mendy and Holmes in a little bit as well. And you lean on your big offensive threats in those points, and Lindor, Alonso, and then, of course, an extra inning Soto. Bingo! Mets bingo. And if the Mets are going to ultimately get to the promised land, it is all about those 3 offensive bats. And those are the kind of wins, again, opponent be damned, that you stash in your pocket and you lean on later on when the times get tougher, the opponents get tougher, and you need that grittiness, that resiliency to say, we've been here before, we've done that. That is a massive, I think, mental comeback win for the Mets.
No, it was mainly because, as good as Clay Holmes was for 5 innings, that 6th inning was a disaster. He just, and look, you kind of want to blame Mendy, but you also need to steal innings. You need to steal outs, really. Forget innings. You need to steal outs because of how taxed your bullpen has been. And Clay just didn't have it after 5. And you give him credit, the Baltimore Orioles, for just racking up the runs and almost making it seem like a wasted good start and a wasted night for the New York Mets. But, I mean, even talk about this all season long. The pitching can only take you so far. Eventually, you have to score runs.
Yeah.
Right? You're the Jacob deGrom rule, right? You can throw a almost damn near perfect game, maybe give up 1 run and still lose. That doesn't work anymore. You have to be able to score runs, and you give credit to the Mets' big bats. The top of that lineup, 1, 2, 3, and 4, they did exactly what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
11 hits, 12 hits they had throughout the game, because Soto's was 12, I think, in the 10th inning. They did what they needed to do to get the victory against a lowly Orioles team, but it's a win nonetheless, and that's all that matters.
And how freeing it must be for Pete Alonso after coming back to the Mets. I think that home run off Devin Williams in the playoffs, and you've seen the moments like this all year again. You just trust him in the big spot. You trust that he's going to find a way to come through for you, and just a mammoth 8th inning home run. I mean, you can't say more about Pete Alonso. But to add to what you said, I am going to spin this, and it's going to feel like I'm raining on the Met Parade. I promise I'm not. I'm speaking from a place of I've been there before.
Go ahead.
I'm going to tie the Mets into the Yankees and the life I've lived. The Mets are in a new realm now. Tommy has called them big brother at times. They are the big spender. They got Juan Soto. What you saw from the Mets last night should be more nights like that where you expect them. They're never out of games. Right. Their bats come back. But to get to that ultimate goal and build a playoff team, build a World Series team, the key, and I've had to learn this, and this is why I yell and scream and Yankee fans sound entitled, you have to see through the positives to find out what's missing and what's lacking. And I do think last night was a reminder of some things that can go awry for the Mets that, you know, you have plenty of time to clean up. I'm going to rattle off that list for you, Tiki. Tell me if I'm crazy. Number one, you alluded to the Clay Holmes situation with Mendy. I love that Mendy manages with his gut. We have said this. We said this a couple times this week. We've said it a couple times over the last couple of years. His gut the last couple games, whether it was not walking Judge or last night, he stuck with Clay Holmes. You could tell Clay Holmes was getting gassed a little too long, and maybe that's a product not trusting the pen. I believe at some point this year you're going to have an honest conversation with Senga and with Manaea coming back. I don't think Clay Holmes is finishing the year in the Mets rotation.
Really?
I really don't.
Well,
I think these innings are wearing on him. I don't think he's going to be able to get through three times in an order.
Yeah, I think it's not, to me, it's not that. I do think he finishes this season as a starter, Clay Holmes, because he's been good. He's
been
at times your best and most consistent pitcher, but you also have to go into every one of these games, if you're Mindy, and say, he's getting me max five innings. That's what right. He's getting me. I know I need to try to save our bullpen. We're doing gymnastics to get these guys up and down and you know, trusting some young arms from your minor league system to come up and fill that void. But you look at his last, we've got five starts, five innings, five and a third, mm-hmm. five innings, four and two thirds, five innings. He's getting you five innings. That's
he
it.
Is.
And even if his pitch count is not, you know, 90, at 71, I think he started the sixth inning with, he's still going to get to that third time around, and it's not going to be there. And I don't know if that's fatigue or learning how to be a complete game starter, because this is only his first year as a starting pitcher. Mindy's got to know five innings is max.
Yes, there's no doubt about it. You can't push him any further than that. And I think when you examine what the Mets are going to need at the trade deadline, and I know we are going to talk about that ad nauseum mm-hmm. over the next couple weeks, the idea, the Mets are going to need to bulk up their bullpen. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
Shocker, most contenders are. We talked about the Yankees with that as well. When you think about Manaea coming back, and you think about Senga coming back, and obviously you have David Peterson right there, and you start doing the math, and Montas, you know, that was a good start the other day with the Yankees, on how many starters you're going to need to get through a postseason, right? Because, again, the ultimate goal is a World Series. Clay Holmes, you need to start weighing. Would Clay Holmes be better suited for this Mets team starting the fourth game in a playoff mm-hmm. series where he gives you five innings, or is Clay Holmes going to be better than any bullpen arm you could acquire where you start to transition at the end of August and September, and that could be a major weapon for you out of the pen?
Sean, I'm telling you, that's just a massive slap in the face. Like, hey, Clay, come here for a second. Let's talk for a minute. You know, look over there to your left. Just right over there. Smack! That's what that'll feel like.
Yes! But you're not a bandy.
You've spent this entire offseason, you sold him this bill. We're going to make you a starting pitcher. We believe in you. We got this pitching lab. Jeremy Hefner is the best pitching coach in baseball. He survives all these regimes, as we've always talked about. He's going to get you right. And Clay Holmes got off to a fantastic start as a starting pitcher after spending most of his career as a reliever, save for that first year in Pittsburgh, which was a failure. And so you look at Clay and you say, we believe in you. So now all of a sudden you're going to get to when it matters and say, we don't believe in you. And here's why your idea feels trollish.
But
here's why it's not going to work.
Okay.
Who's going on short rest? Like, this isn't the CC Sabathias of the 09 Yankees who's, you need me to pitch on 3 days rest? I got you. Who's doing it? Senga's not doing it.
No, he's
right?
not.
You're going to trust Manaea or Montas, one of those guys doing it? No, who? David Peterson?
But you
who's pitching on short rest if you're going with a three-man rotation when it matters in the postseason?
I don't think you are. I think you're going to pitch Senga. I think you're going to pitch Peterson. I think you're going to pitch Manaea. And if you're asking me to flip a coin.
Lucky.
Okay. But no matter what, a starter is going to end up ultimately in that bullpen when you're accomplishing the ultimate goal.
Right.
And again, bear with me. I understand why this sounds foolish, but I think a win like that is a reminder of the ultimate goal for the Mets.
Right.
Do I want to trust Montas, who's never done it before? McGill, when he comes back in mid-August, who's not
McGill's
that guy?
McGill's got to be in the pen.
Okay, right. But I would flip the coin and go, give me Montas starting that fourth game rather than five innings of Holmes. I'd rather not waste five innings of Holmes in a playoff series and know that I could count on him to maybe be my second biggest, most reliable reliever. And I don't think it's a slap in the face from this standpoint. We are already seeing that he can't get pushed past five innings. That's not his fault. This is a transition year for him.
Of course it is.
And I don't think by going to him in mid-August, September, if this continues down this trajectory, I don't think it's a slap in the face, because you're not telling him that experiment's over. He's going to go right back to being a starter, and hopefully you build up more innings the next year. But I think it makes the Mets the most well-rounded team to try to accomplish their goal this year. Because you even saw it last night. You just cross your fingers at everybody in that bullpen. Who are you acquiring at the trade deadline in the bullpen that would be better suited than a guy you have the answer for
right.
that is showing you can only go five innings
not
right now?
Not with everybody else who's in this race also looking for those top-end relievers.
You have a crazy internal option that you can go to because you're going to be getting Senga and Manaea back.
It just feels like you're taking steps backward. And I get it. You might be taking steps back ultimately to take steps forward, but I'm just trying to think of it from a Clay Holmes perspective. If you're Clay Holmes, you've You've been successful. He's an all-star as a reliever, as a closer. So you know he had that success. Last year with the Yankees, it just fell apart. We had zero trust in him as a closer.
But you know what Clay Holmes did last year?
What's that?
Kept his mouth shut and was a team player.
Of course. I'm not saying he's not going to Marcus Stroman this and basically
I'm a starter.
He's not doing that. But I do feel like internally that just it feels like a little bit of a slight. And
yeah.
It's the last thing you want to do for a team that has huge aspirations for a guy who honestly felt like he was reinventing his baseball career. It's just truly what it was. I'm not saying it was a failure with the Yankees or as a closer because he had so much success. But at some point, even when you have success, you start saying, I need to do something different. I wanted to reinvent myself. And Clay Holmes has reinvented himself as a starter. Now, he doesn't have that length yet to get to 6 or 7 innings. And ultimately, he's leaving his bullpen with way too many outs to get, 12 in this case. But it's just who he is right now. I think you have to trust him because he's been so good as a starter. I think the alternatives, and whether it's Montas or Manaea, who we haven't even seen yet, I don't know if that's going to be better than the option Clay Holmes gives you, even if he's only getting you 5 innings. Yeah.
And obviously the other caveat is health, right? When Senga and Manaea come back, those guys got to be healthy too, which is another thing you're not rooting for injuries. Obviously, that's a stupid question, but assuming health may be a mistake when it comes to a Kodai Senga, and that would change everything as well. Here's the other problem, and we saw it last night. The Mets have a Mark Vientos problem right now. they just do.
Well, maybe not. Keep going.
Okay. So we all know his defense leaves a lot to be desired at third base to begin with, yep. And when you watch Ronnie Mauricio make a play like he made last night, you're reminded of, man, I don't know, if Vientos ain't hitting and he's not giving you anything defensively, we might have a better internal option. And as far as the hitting goes...
And by the way, Mauricio's been pretty damn good.
Yes.
His last few games.
Yeah, the Mets, between the Beatty, Mauricio, Vientos trio...
Yes.
...are dealing from a position of strength. It's kind of, which one stands out the most. And last year, Vientos was the quote-unquote rock star.
Right.
Like positive Tommy gave us. You start to see signs. I know it's a very, very small sample size since he came back and he survived getting sent down. Ronnie Mauricio feels like he has a chance to be it this year for the Mets at third base.
Let's not forget, 2 years ago, he was that guy. He was that it. It was like, man, we can't wait to see Ronnie Mauricio. When is this guy going to step onto the scene and just take this opportunity and fly with it? And then he tears his ACL in winter ball. And so it's like, ugh. And then once you tear an ACL... And maybe you get a year, you come back, and then who knows, you're basically restarting. Yet he did all of that, went through that trial, tribulation. He's back now. He's been put in a position where he's got to perform, and he's performing. Obviously, offensively, because he hit the home run last night, but his defense is spectacular.
Yes.
Like that throw from, what inning is that, sixth inning, I think it was? It was unbelievable.
The arm talent's there.
Athletic. Right, on the money, confident, didn't even think about it. And so I think Ronnie Mauricio, while he's interchangeable at second, he easily could be just placed right there at third base. You leave Beatty at second. Hell, Jeff McNeil's playing hellified center field right now. Sliding catch he had a couple weeks ago. He had that Robin Holm run. Right, it's almost like they lucked into an infield combination that might really work for them. And while Mark Vientos feels like he's failing based on what we saw a year ago, maybe he's just your right-handed pitch hitting option.
He could be.
He's just that utility platoon situational guy.
And I'm not giving up on Mark Vientos. We saw too much last year. But what I'm saying is this is now transitioning here as we hit July from the experimental phase of the Mets to what is the best version of the Mets.
Right.
And if the Mets had no problem at all, and it was deserved, sending Francisco Alvarez for a fixer-upper down in AAA, I don't know why you wouldn't look at Vientos.
Kind of like Turin's behind the dish. Just ball it.
But my point is, to me, the Mets have already proven, it doesn't matter what level prospect you were for us, we're doing what's best for this baseball team right now.
Well, you have to.
You have to.
At this point, you have to.
Last night's a perfect example. You give Vientos a chance when he pinch hits for Winker, goes 0-2. When you have to, then take the bat out of his hands and bring in Jankowski to bunt for Mark Vientos there. I don't know how you're telling me you don't have a Mark Vientos problem. Well, you don't trust him.
Well,
right.
It's a problem, but it's not really a problem because you can still just situationally use him.
Yes.
You're not relying on Mark Vientos to be your everyday third baseman. You're not relying on him to be, all right, we got a situation. We need a hit. Despite Pete Alonso's urging, he's not going to be that in that position as often as I think we may be thinking he is because of how, what he did a year ago. It's not like with the Yankees, who now have Peraza at third base, mm-hmm. who played hellified defense last night.
What a smoking single he had to drive in that first run.
Whatever, it doesn't even matter. His defense is elite. But the Yankees might have a third base problem. I don't think, or an infield issue. I don't think that the Mets have an infield issue because Vientos is kind of just like gravy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So maybe problem is the wrong word. It's more of a dilemma.
Yeah.
What is best for Mark Vientos and what is best for the Mets? And you're right. Ultimately, him being that right-handed bat off the bench, that just gives you bench depth. But for developing him right now, I'm riding the hot hand with Ronnie Mauricio. And I'm considering after this All-Star break, sending Vientos down like I did Alvarez and getting reps every day to try to get better defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, figure out what the heck has gone wrong offensively.
Right. I don't know if you're going to, just to me, he feels situational to me. And it sucks because of what we saw a year ago. Obviously, that's where he started. Situational mm-hmm. right-handed bat for the Mets. He worked his way into an everyday player. We thought he was going to be the next coming of whoever, and it just didn't pan out for this year. But to me, he feels like gravy. And so I'm not worried about him because of all the other options that are actually playing really well right now.
What is the best option for the New York Mets at a couple of those spots? Are you willing to keep running Clay Holmes out there till the end of the season for five innings as a starter? Or should you, after a night like that last night, where you see he just doesn't have anything past the sixth mm-hmm. inning, transition him to the pen? Tiki says no. I say start thinking about it to try to build a real World Series contender because you're not getting a better bullpen arm than that. And the Mark Vientos, Ronnie Mauricio question, as the big bats of the Mets come back in a big way. Also, today, for both Yankee and Met fans, we will monitor. The Phillies have a day game. Boy, what a loss for the Phillies last night. And the Blue Jays getting the White Sox Invitational again as they win even a shortened game.
Dude, what is this, 10 in a row?
It doesn't end.
The Mets are down 6-2 last night in Baltimore. And, you know, we talked on Monday, you win 2 out of 3 from Milwaukee, 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. You feel pretty good about yourselves. But one thing you didn't want to see them do was to go to Baltimore, a team that's had a down season, they haven't been good, and then drop the first game of the series. Right. Lo and behold, they were on their way to do so, and then, as Steve Cohen called them, the Fabulous Four. Nimmo and Lindor and Soto, and a lot. It's a hell of a win last night.
Don't forget Ronnie Mauricio.
Yeah, for sure.
Like he's been great. I thought his glove was awesome, and obviously I think last night was indicative of just really – you know, I thought Young was going to just mow him down. Obviously, he got into the six, and he got himself in some trouble, and they pulled him. But you needed a win like this, and you needed Soto to continue his campaign going into the All-Star break. And
sure.
I thought he's done a great job of making a case that he should be on the roster. So to see, like, to your point, all bats on deck and everybody making an impact in that game, it was great. And you got to credit Lindor for popping it off, starting it off with him.
So. No, and it's, you know, it's so funny. There's two things about that inning specifically. So you've got Gary on SNY is talking, I would say, maybe a pitch or two prior, talking about how, you know, the Mets are looking to have, you know, that big at-bat in that big inning. And it was either a pitch, maybe two, where he hits the home run to kind of get them going. And then how many times have we watched a game and we have sat there, you've heard an announcer say it, or even like playing in high school, hey, down two, just need a bloop and a blast. And that Soto
exactly what
base happened. Base hit was a bloop. And then the Alonso blast, and next thing you know, the game's even. And you give a lot of credit to, I think, Edwin Diaz and then Brazoban for really bouncing back. Very good ninth and tenth innings. And if you're, not that we're going to discuss much about the Orioles, but if you're an Orioles fan, that is a brutal loss in a game that you kind of feel like you had won. And if you're a Met fan, you feel great about it because you kind of continue your winning ways. The guys that you need to carry this team did the job last night. And it's just another one off the calendar now. And now it's all of a sudden you look up, it's not a couple of series in a row. Now it's 5 of the last 7.
Yeah, and to your point also, you know, you watch that game, and like I mentioned earlier, you think Young is going to really kind of dog walk this thing out because he was just so great.
You mean Holmes.
Holmes, excuse me. Clay Holmes, excuse me. And he gets beat up. And you're saying to yourself, man, this isn't good. But I think a lot has to do with being responsive, man. And that's why, you know, this time of year, you want to start seeing character pop, right? A lot of these guys could say, you know, we got a couple of days coming up. Let's just figure this thing out and kind of get to the break. They didn't. They rallied and they fought. And that's just a testament to where this team's at, man. They just keep going.
And, you know, with Holmes, so you're right, the sixth inning was a mess.
Yeah.
What's so bizarre about that sixth inning is he goes on the leadoff batter. So, he's through five, and they have a 2-1 lead. Everything's going well. And he goes 0-2 on the first batter. I don't remember who it was, but he's 0-2 on him. And you're thinking, you're right, he's just going to continue on doing what he's doing. He's getting ground ball outs. And then he hits the batter. And then you get the base, on an 0-2 pitch, on a terrible slider inside, he hits the back foot of the batter. Then
and this
get
place
the,
is rocking at this point. The fans for sure. Are in it.
And a lot of Met fans, too, by the way,
true.
In the building. A lot of Met fans in the building. But yes, it was a decent crowd, and the place was. And then it was base hit after base hit. Next thing you know, they're trailing again. You look up, it's 6-2, and it's like, wow, that happened very quickly. He's out of the game. And, you're thinking, rough start to a series, but. You give the now the one thing about this team that has been right from day one, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but can you think of a time so far this season where Lindor, Alonso, and Soto all at the same time have been great? Because I don't think we've seen, like, last night was an example of what it can be.
Not this year, because
we haven't seen it, right?
No, we haven't, because Soto started off so rough, right? And McNeil had kind of, I know you're talking about Lindor and Alonso, I'm just talking about the overall group. But nevertheless, I think everybody's just starting to hit their stride. And it feels like it right now, especially last night is indicative of that. But no, I don't think we've had a moment like that. I think Alonso's been great. I think Lindor has been money. It's just a matter of Soto kind of getting out of his rut. I think one player of the month of June.
Yep.
So
and getting very comfortable.
And getting very comfortable as well. So I think it's just... I think right now everybody's hitting their stride.
No question about it. And it's, they had that 3-13 stretch in June. Horrific. We know that. Losing streak, all of that. It happens. I mean, the LA Dodgers right now, who are as good as anybody, they're in the midst of a 5-game losing streak. It's the ups and the downs of a season. So you just hope as a Met fan that they went through the June swoon, as we like to call it. And perhaps now, again, go win this series. You always want the sweep, but go take 2 out of 3, win the series.
Go get it.
You keep doing that, you're going to be one of the best teams in the league, if not the best team.
And you stated this the other day, it's a good time to have Kodai and those guys come back, too.
For sure.
Especially after last night. So, yeah, I think the Mets, it was a gritty win, and they pulled it out, and you needed the big bats pop. And I think, once again, credit Lindor, credit Alonso, and credit Soto, man, because I think we talked about having that type of mental edge. There was so much expected of him because of his contract. For him to be responsive in the month of June going into July, man, this is indicative that, man, he's worth the money right now.
I think, I think when you sign a guy to a big contract and they get off to a tough start, you think adjustment period. And I think a lot of people didn't think there would be that because Soto did not leave New York. I mean, it was Yankees to Mets, but...
That's a good point.
But there still is a comfortability about a new team, new franchise, new building, new everything.
Yeah, especially because, the people across the street hate your guts now, all right? And they
certainly saw that.
Right. Well, it's true because I think for a lot of Mets fans, they feel like they gave you their heart and love, and you turned around and it wasn't enough. And in Valley, he earned it. I mean, he had MVP numbers for the Yankees. But overall, it felt like a match made in heaven. So for a lot of Yankees fans watching Soto cross the street, it was just like, well, what went wrong?
Like why?
We was in the World Series. Yep. Like, what else? What else do you want compared to a team that, last year, at one point, they were thinking about selling, right? And they kind of rallied towards late in the season. So he had to overcome all that. Even when his first appearance back at the stadium, getting booed and people yelling at him. We talk about mental edge and being mentally tough through all that. And so much is made of body language and being responsive and not feeling like, you're soaking it all in rather than being more Teflon about it. So, yeah, I mean, Soto, I got to give him his credit and his flowers right now. He's humming.
Yeah, he is humming. The Mets are right now in a good spot going into Baltimore again for another game tonight. They've got 5 games left before the break, 3 with Kansas City at the end. And, yes, Senga, and we do expect Manaea to pitch this weekend. So all would be right with them if they can take care of business going into the break.
Now, I didn't play into this Fab Four talk, right? We were talking about, to me, it was the Big Three. And I don't even like that, because the Big Three, who was the original Big Three? I know the Yankees core four.
I think the big three was LeBron, Bosh, and Wade. Okay. I remember that. Yeah, I think that's the first time I really heard it.
I think you're right. And maybe it was maybe it predates that, but I think you're right. That was the big three forming in Miami. And then ever since then, it was Durant and Harden and Kyrie. Mm-hmm. Whatever. There's been very different variations of the big three.
Brunson, Cat.
But for me, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who's the third?
OG?
Yeah. Bridges one night. Yeah, no. So, to me, it was just about the big three guys in that lineup, Soto, Alonso, Lindor, but Cohen used the term Fab Four, and I got to be honest with you, I was not familiar that the Beatles were dubbed the Fab Four. Like, when I first heard it, I was thinking Michigan as well. I know they were making fun of Evan for that on the morning show.
I didn't hear that part. I heard the morning show today with C-Mac and Jerry, but I missed this part.
So when you heard Fab Four, do you immediately think Beatles?
I think Michigan, but it's Fab Five in Michigan.
With C-Web and those guys. Right, so, but when I heard it, I think Michigan, and I was like, oh, wait a second, that was the Fab Five at Michigan.
I think maybe more Fantastic Four, the old comic superhero stuff.
So I do not think Fab Four Beatles. Anyway, that was a thing. Point is, none of them showed up in yesterday's doubleheader. We were on the air for game one of that, and I do have a major issue with Juan Soto not hustling. On. I know he beat it out. Mm-hmm. I have a major issue with that after watching it again. To a point where, if I'm Lindor, like, enough's enough to me, and I'm not trying to pick on Juan Soto. This is, please, like, I know what's going to happen. Digital and Sal Ripso, like, please spare me, okay? I'm not into the clickbait stuff on this one. Certainly not. Not really ever, but
yeah,
at least this one.
Yeah, yeah.
No, this is, if I'm Lindor, and he's the leader of this team, and I see that from, similar to what we saw from Jake Taylor going to Billy Dorn's house.
Yeah, that's great.
Hey,
that was great when his wife was there. Yeah, that was great.
If you ever pull a stunt like that again, I'll cut off your, shove him down.
Yeah, good reference. That's a good scene.
If I'm Lindor and you're a real leader, that's what I do to Soto.
Like, that's not going to happen. Not like that.
Oh, I know it's not BT, but, and I'm not saying it has to happen verbatim with that. Although I wouldn't be opposed to it. I wouldn't be opposed to it, but somebody, maybe Mendy.
Oh, that's where I was going.
Okay,
but finish up.
If it's not Lindor, then maybe somebody needs to go to Soto and say, hey, because now this is me saying this. I gave him a pass for the one in Boston. I gave him a pass for the one against the Yankees. You did not.
No.
I did. So now, I like that one yesterday to me is inexcusable. Now, he made it, which makes it easier. Because either Lindor, who's the leader of the team, or Mendy can go to him and say, you made it. Don't ever do that again. Don't ever do that again. You're getting paid a lot of money here. I'm not saying you got to bust it out of the box and run like Nimmo every single time. Mm-hmm. You've got to hustle. And he did not hustle on that play. He pulled up. Like, he wasn't even running.
No.
If you were running hard throughout front, not saying you got to be a blazing speed or try to beat it out, run down the first baseline. Inexcusable not to. Somebody needs to send the message because that can't happen. It didn't hurt them yesterday. Their offense, their pathetic lack of offense hurt them in both those games yesterday, but that to me would be inexcusable.
See, but you say it didn't hurt them yesterday, and I know what you mean, but I still think it hurts them downstream. I mean, there's a lot of young kids on this team who are impressionable, who are in the early stages of careers, whether Vientos stays or goes, Beatty stays or goes, Acuna stays or goes, Alvarez gets back, stays or goes. You just don't see leaders and grinders doing that. You know, David, I know the documentary is coming out on David Wright. David Wright with a bad back didn't do that. Derek Jeter never did that. You will never see Aaron Judge do that. Even when Judge is 37 and diminished, he's just not going to do that. The problem, though, is we can identify what needs to change, but I'm going to spare everybody the waste of time. It's not going to change. I'm going to tell you why. When you're in a new situation, generally, most people, whether it's a new radio station, a new baseball team, a new law firm, whatever, your first, a new team, anything in life, no matter how old you are, your first inclination, it's human nature, is to try to impress upon everybody that you're diligent, that you're talented, that you're worthy of being here. And we all know he's incredibly talented and worthy of being there.
And I do think he works hard.
I do, too. At his craft, certain aspects of his craft, I agree with that. But the fact that he's doing this now when he just got here and there's a honeymoon period, you know, like, to me, that's just telling me that down the road, now he's going to hit for the Met fan, but down the road, there's going to be a consistent issue for the Met fan. Take that one to the bank.
Which is why Mendoza's got to nip it in the bud. And I think that the issue is that he hit a number to second and he was mad at himself.
Yeah, that was totally
okay,
it.
So then, Juan, you have two ways to handle this. A, stop hitting numbers. B, if you do, run to first base. That's it. There are only two ways to solve this. You don't like having to run out a number to second, then stop hitting a number to second with guys on base. Easy fix. And if you do hit one, because not everybody's perfect, the least you could do is run to first base. That's it. Now, I didn't have an issue with Mendoza. I know Mendoza was getting ripped yesterday for the Peterson decision. I have no problem with that. What I have a problem is Stanek. Stanek is not very good, so the Mets need high leverage arms.
But the manager's got to know that. Yeah. And he went to him willingly. Stay with Peterson.
What, and pitch a complete game again? Oh, come on. He gave up a base hit. You start him in the eighth inning.
It was a five-hopper the other way. It wasn't squared up with a bullet.
You start him in the eighth inning. You can't.
Come on,
he gave up a base
hit.
What are you going to do? You're going to push him, and then it would be, oh, Mendoza stuck with Peterson.
The All-Star break coming up. I know he's now an All-Star, and that was good for him. But, yes, 100% he should have stayed. But
I did not have a major issue with that. And it's also not the reason they lost the game. They lost the game because when we were here in the first inning,
they couldn't hit.
They couldn't hit. That's it. So that's why they lost game one specifically. And then you could even say the same thing in game two. You have a bullpen game that we're not set up to win. Now, I'm not going nuts about the losses because even though you don't like losing series, especially to the team that you're better than, they'll be better now. Starting with tonight with Senga back, Manaea coming back this weekend, they're going to add in the bullpen. So the Mets held their head above water getting to the All-Star break this through. Now, assuming they don't get swept here, but even with that, like they survived against the Brewers and the Yankees. They won a game against Baltimore, go in the series, all is forgotten here, get to the All-Star break and build off of that. But it was an ugly day, and to me, mostly because of that quote-unquote Fab Four that was nowhere to be found.
Well, as I said, you know, coming off the Brewers and the Yankees for sure, you know, they did definitely stabilize their season, and not that it's been destabilized. I'm not saying that here, but, I mean, yesterday's a bad look for the Mets here. I mean, the Orioles stink, okay? Now, a couple things we got to get into. You touched on Soto. I agree. Unacceptable for any new... If when Cat's not in great shape or loafing up and down the court or Soto's doing it or other Yankees, like, we get on them. That's the bare minimum expectation. We pay a lot of money. We invest a lot of time. Run! Just give us effort. Nothing else needs to be said. That's self-explanatory. The offense. This is why they need a bat. The Mets scored 4 runs in 18 innings yesterday. Their top 4 hitters who are supposed, and have been carrying the mail, quite frankly, to be fair, but when they don't hit, they don't do anything, and that's a problem. So the top 4 hitters for the Mets yesterday were 5-for-27. They lost 3-1 the first game. They were 2-for-14 with 5 strikeouts. They lose 7-3 the second game. They were 3-for-13 with a couple of whiffs in game 2. Now, it's not that I'm going nuts on it, getting swept to a bad Orioles team in mid-July. No, that's even though it's not a great look, but that's fine. It's a long season. We get that. But this, to me, is emblematic of what ails the Mets the most. And every time you and I get into this, and I got to see if these guys are healthy, and the new pitchers, and if they're not, well, maybe you need the arm, and you definitely need a bullpen arm. I'm going to say this until the cows either come home or take a nap. If people don't think the Mets need a real bat, you are nuts.
You see, I disagree with that.
But when the top 4 don't hit, they don't do anything.
Okay, so bring in one bat. You think he's going to make a difference?
He may have yesterday. You lost 3-1.
If they don't hit, the Mets aren't going to win. It's those three guys.
If nobody hits, you're not going to win. But you've got to increase the chances.
They have 3 superstar bats.
Who did nothing yesterday and they lost.
Oh, okay. But that's what happens. When Aaron Judge doesn't hit, generally the Yankees lose.
Right? Judge didn't do much last night. Yankees won. I agree with that. I know what you mean about Judge, but that's one of my problems with the Yankees.
Understood. It's one game. The Mets' big 3
It's not
guys,
one game. They're hitting 209 with runners in scoring position. 21st in baseball. It's horrendous.
Those big 3 have to hit. If they don't, the
You don't think
over.
They need another bat?
No, I'm saying that.
A big bat.
I'm saying that I don't think that that's going to solve the issues. If those guys don't hit, they won't win.
Okay.
So I don't care which bat. Who's the biggest bat you could bring in? Eugenio Suarez?
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. If you bring him in and Alonso and Soto and Lindor don't produce, they're not winning anyway.
Unless Suarez hits a 3-run home run, then you might win.
I mean,
and by the way, first, he's a home run hitter, so he might. And with these pitchers coming back, you know, it might be a 2-run homer or a 2-run double. Now, Vientos started to swing the bat a little bit better. I know he struck out on 3 pitches. One, I think that was game 2. But he came in for Winker, hit a couple on the screws. And maybe that's a good sign, all right? But to me, and again, this has really been my point about the Mets for a while. Like, and I know that this applies to other teams too. But if their top 3 or 4 don't hit, they don't score. And to me, that is a recipe to lose in the wild card. Forget about the NLCS. Now, you very well might get in the first series, Lindor hits, 412, Soto hits 3 bombs, 9 RBIs. That's totally possible because those guys are studs. But baseball, it ain't basketball. You know Brunson's pumping in 30. You don't know Lindor's going to have a great series. You just like Judge. You don't know if he's going to have. Matter of fact, he really hasn't had many. He's had more bad than good. So to me, I'm just trying to increase the odds of giving my offense a chance to win. And if the first four guys don't hit, if I bring somebody else that can, and now you got Buxton with a hand injury, who knows how long he's going to be down. He's hurt. I don't think the Mets offense is good enough, and I've said this from day one.
Yeah, I just believe in those big three, and they will go as those guys go, regardless of who the acquisition is. Now, do I trust Nimmo to be consistent? I don't. He could be the fourth piece of that. I do trust Lindor. I 100% trust Soto, and I 100% trust Pete Alonso. And if they don't get it done, they're going to lose because of that. Like, I don't think there's a move to be made that can change that or enhance that. Lengthen out the lineup, maybe get a professional bat in center. By the way, I would not go after Cedric Mullins after watching him these three games. Like, he's not enough of a difference maker. He's an upgrade. He's a proven vet. He's not enough of a difference maker to me. Now, again, I don't think they need a superstar, but I need some type of impact bat to help you at the bottom of the order or in center field specifically. And he just, to me, there's not enough of an upgrade there over Tyrone Taylor or even Jeff McNeil in center field.
Okay, we got to get back to something that we disagree on, and we got to have a little conversation about your manager, who suddenly is looking very lost. Mendoza has had two bad weeks. Now, specific to yesterday, if Peterson was a low-pitch guy, I'd say, you know what, Sal, you're right. In May, of his five starts, all right, three, he went over 100 pitches. June 11th, 106, July, 103. You got a double header. You know you're going to use arms all day. Now, if he starts and he gives up a rocket that goes 470 and it's flat, all right, he's at a manageable number. You start the eighth inning. I know you give up a single. It was fairly soft, and you pull it. So to me, there was two mistakes. Number one, Peterson's five times better than Stanek, who, if Stanek is anywhere near an important situation in the playoffs, leave the stadium because the Mets are not winning that game. He's awful, all right? And he's got to be relegated to, like, long release. Stinks. Number two, this was an awful look for Mendoza. When you bring in the righty, you're saying, hey, Gunner, grab your bat. You're inviting a lefty who's not having a great season, to be fair, but is an incredibly talented young player, as we know. We wish that was Volpe, really. What happens? Bang! Two-run jack. So you willingly take out somebody who's so much better than Stanek and is a lefty that would have kept Gunner on the bench or neutralized his ability to do what he did. I don't know where else to... Like, there were three mistakes made in 30 seconds.
Well, but they don't have a high-leverage arm that they could use.
They had it on the mound. You should have stayed with Peterson.
Yeah, but to me, that's just... for me, it's a second guess. I have no issue with that. Well, think about what we're talking about now. Complaining about taking a pitcher out in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
It's 2025.
Well, when you lose the game, it's okay to go back and say maybe it was the wrong move.
No, see, to me, that's where we fundamentally disagree. It shouldn't be about the result. Just because the result wasn't the right one does not mean it's the wrong move. So now we're all going to be, hey, push the pitcher. Because you lost and it didn't work out, every starting pitcher that's better than the bullpen arm, because they are, every starting pitcher should be better than every bullpen arm outside of one or two in your pen. And the Mets right now have one, Edwin Diaz, that would be better than the majority of their starters, if not all of them. Every other one is going to be less than. Reed Garrett, Brazoban, you name it, they're worse than the starter, especially David Peterson. That doesn't mean that Peterson's going to be effective in the eighth or ninth inning. Like, you just can't do it. And it can't always be about... It's also a doubleheader there. He maybe had his map of who we wanted in game
one. Well, you got to deal with the map. I mean, don't tell me about the lanes and the maps. You got to react to what's in front of you.
But they had a bullpen game in game
two. I know what they had, which is more reason to keep Peterson out there.
Yeah, well, he was trying to go with his higher leverage right now.
High leverage. The guy's ERA is six for the last 5 weeks.
Right now, Stanek is one of their higher leverage guys. I don't trust him, but Stanek has been the guy. One of the guys.
But that doesn't make it right. How do you let this guy off the hook?
Who are they supposed to pitch?
Peterson!
He's not going to pitch the whole game.
I know, but Sal, give him another batter for crying out loud.
He gave up a hit. So if he gives
up... It's a five-hopper!
If he gives up another... If he gets another batter and then gives up a hit, then what do you do?
Then it might be a different evaluation.
Oh, okay, so now we're talking about one batter. So
but at least there's more evidence to support the move to pull him out.
He tried to get out in front of it saying, you know what?
And he was wrong.
Okay, but just because the results
he's had a bad 2 weeks.
I disagree.
What do you mean disagree? He's messed up with Peterson alone twice. I mean, so all the times you told
me... How's he messed up with Peterson?
You've told me a million times, and I like Mendoza, but a little bit of the shine is off the rock all of a sudden. Like, he has made some mistakes the last couple of weeks with the pitching. And one of the things you told me was, unlike Boone, he's a gut guy. Yeah. Well, the gut's not working out the way it once did.
Okay, who are the options that they have in the staff
I'm
right now?
I'm going to say it again. Peterson.
No. You're talking about the last couple of weeks. Have you I'm assuming you're aware of their roster situation.
Very aware. And which is why I know that Stanek's ERA is awful.
And he's still one of their better options.
And he decided
right now
to go to him.
He's one of their better
he's
options.
He's not a better
right
option than Peterson.
What about the other 2 weeks? And you're going based just off of the results.
No, that's
it
not.
It could have gone the
you
other
don't know
way
what I'm thinking in real time.
No, you just said that.
No, but I'm saying that's what he's thinking. Right. You don't know what I'm thinking. Listen, the thing with the Mets, they're not whole. So I'm not going nuts on this.
So how is it the
year
manager's fault when every arm that they go to in the bullpen sucks?
Because you've got to, if you've got a chance to avoid going to one of those arms, I would do it.
Okay, so now, Peterson should have thrown 100-plus pitches.
Well, why not? He's done it before.
Yeah, okay.
He's done it before. I just gave you the numbers. He's done it.
What were you saying yesterday? You were worried about Peterson because he's
I was, but that doesn't mean he didn't throw a gem.
Okay, so he was pitching a gem yesterday.
It was a gem, dude.
They took him out in the eighth inning. He didn't take him out in the sixth or the seventh. It was the eighth inning.
But, Sal, he did not have a laborious seventh inning. If he threw a 27-pitch seventh inning, I'm like, all right, the residue. And that's what they look
he's
at.
He's got a bullpen
he
game.
He was clean sailing, man.
He's got a bullpen game coming up after that. Going into the Yankee series 1 week ago, I thought the Mets were going to be destroyed because they have no pitching. They had three games against the Yankees, one of which was started by an actual starter. How do you survive that? Not to mention that the rest of their bullpen, so not only their rotation, their bullpen is depleted.
That's why we gave him credit for
okay,
beating the
I'm
Yankees
gonna give
twice.
I'm
going to
give you some names. Chris Davinsky, horrendous. Alex Carrillo.
Horrendous.
Rico Garcia.
Dude, the names
Justin
are a joke.
Justin Hageman.
I agree.
Richard Lovelady. Ryan Stanek. Brandon Waddell. This is the Mets bullpen right now.
No, but
every which way you turn, it's not good enough. Like this is their staff right now. This is their staff. I mean, that is just not good enough.
I agree with that. I know you know what I'm saying, but I think you're still missing it. I know the bullpen stinks, which is why I'm going to be fair to Mendoza in totality.
Like
that's Stearns' job.
Stanek, Garrett, and Brazovan are three of their best arms.
They're arsonists at this point. They're bringing matches and gas cans to the fight. They all stink right now. So if you have a chance to avoid that, all I'm saying, Sal, is you avoid it. Now, it was okay when he threw 106 pitches on July 3rd. It was okay when he threw 103 pitches back on May 15th. I've got every game log in front of me. Mm-hmm. I went back and I made sure that I looked over this to make sure that I'm not being unfair. If this is not a Clark Schmidt situation, which you and I both agreed upon, you don't push because he was never going to finish the eighth, let alone the ninth, to try to get that stupid no hitter, which some people they disagreed. Oh, I want to see history. Not now he's hurt anyway, but not at the risk of an irresponsible pitch count. Peterson was not David Pitt, Doug Peterson football. David Peterson was not in the middle, nor was he at the end of a reckless situation. He was fully in command. He was fully in charge. The options suck behind him. And not only do they stink as pitchers, but you invited one of the young studs in baseball to get off the bench. And what did he do? Bang, two-run shot.
I mean,
and you don't blame the manager on that?
No, I don't.
You're nuts with this.
I blame the pitcher for giving up. Stanek has been one of the better relievers that they've had.
Not in the last 6 weeks, Al.
No,
it's been bad.
The last several times out, he's been okay.
It's
and
been
even
terrible.
Overall, they're not very good. Stanek has been one of the more reliable arms. He is the more trusted arm right now in the bullpen. Outside of Diaz, that's it. Stanek, Garrett, Brazoban would be the three high-leverage guys. And they're just not good enough. I don't know. So you needed Peterson to finish the game. He wasn't going to finish the game. And if he didn't, and the Mets didn't hit. Like, who's more of a culprit for the game yesterday? Mendoza?
The hitting.
Okay.
No, I said
so
that, though. Yeah. That's why I ran through the night.
Okay,
that's
so
why they need a bat.
So now,
to me, there's multiple issues from yesterday. Not just one.
If he stuck with Peterson, which, by the way, he let Peterson start the eighth inning, which in today's day and age, for a manager to let a starting pitcher start the eighth inning, the majority of those guys would be fired from the data-driven front office for having a starting pitcher start the eighth inning. That's a fact in today's game.
I don't know if it's a fact when you're in your mid-80s. Like, if you're like 97, yeah. I understand the
tone
in
baseball.
Don't
want to see the guys a third or fourth time through. Okay, so
I get it. I applaud him for that.
He let him start the eighth inning.
Then he got tight.
He gave up a base hit.
What? Did he? It was like five hopper the other way.
All right, whatever. A guy
he barely
on.
Got around on it.
A guy on. If anything, I think you can make a better case for starting.
Was that Couser? I think that was Colton Couser, right?
If anything, I think you can make a case for starting the inning clean with a reliever. But he wanted to push Peterson, see as far as he could go. If he got the first out, maybe he's going to get another one. I didn't hear the post game afterward if he said it was a predetermined plan going into that inning. Like, see, it was. I think he said it was going to take it batter for batter, batter by batter. And his gut, whatever, he went with it. It was wrong. I mean, that's what managers do.
So I'm trying to think of the Yankees equivalent to Peterson. Maybe let's say Schmidt before he gets hurt. Something like that, right? If the game is where it was with Peterson yesterday. And Boone pulls Schmidt for a stiff. And not even to mention the whole lefty righty. I mean that's just baseball 101. I don't know how he's not getting crushed for that. Like that is, and I like Mendy. That's stupid.
Yeah, you could crush him.
That is I got you. That is stupid. But like if Boone did that and somebody Gunnar Henderson did a 2-run bomb off Loaisiga, who's trashed right now, I'd be saying the same thing. I'd be like, what are you doing? Let him eat.
Yeah, I guess I would not. I'd be saying the same thing the other way. He took him out of the game. I mean, I can't kill Mendoza for having his starting pitcher start the eighth inning, give him a base hit. Okay, see if Stanek get the job done. It's not his fault Stanek sucks and can't get an out and gives up a gopher ball right away. That's not Mendy's
fault. That's on Stearns, which is a different conversation. Stearns got to get some, he better wake up.
What do you mean Stearns?
He got to get some pitches in the area. Well, oh, my God.
Yeah. I get it.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.